Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Game, and then you couldn't touch him late.
I think Paul Skenes has been great when you compare him to every other pitcher. When you compare him to my own personal expectations for him, I think he's just been good. Like, I would give his grade, which obviously I'm not grading him the same way I do Bailey Falter or Carmen Maginski. I give him, like, a B on the season.
Heaney's got the best grade of any starter, pretty obviously, so far for them, because you didn't have the expectation.
Tough time to say that, though, because
he's coming off his worst start, but you get my point.
So, he's made seven starts now, Skenes. Opening day against Miami, he didn't get out of the sixth inning against a lineup of minor leaguers. I don't think he pitched great that day. They lost 5-4. He was just so-so. Next game against Tampa, seven innings, no runs, really good. Then the next game against St. Louis at home, his first home start, it was cold, very cold. Six innings, five runs.
Not good.
Next start against Washington at home, six innings, one earned run, very good. They crushed the Nationals 10-3.
Easy game, rocking chair.
Cleveland was the Saturday where the team chant started, and McCutchen was not happy about not being in the lineup, and he gave up two runs in seven innings, but they got shut out and lost 3-0, so he was a hard luck loser that day. And then the excellent start he had in L.A. on Friday, and this one. So he's made seven starts. I would say four have been good to great, and three have been okay to bad. And I would expect for Paul Skenes, like, seven starts, six would be really good, and there would be one clunker in there.
I would say out of every 10, I only give him one clunker and then maybe one that's not quite dominant. But 8 of the 10 you expect to be awesome. He's striking out two fewer batters per 9 innings. That's the other number that jumps out for me. He struck out 9 against the Dodgers the previous games. 4-6-7-6.
And let me say, like, I don't think he's the least of their worries. He's obviously nowhere near the top, like, 5.
But if he's not himself, forget about anything. That's my point.
He's got the 27th best ERA this year.
If he's not a top two pitcher in baseball, they're in humongous.
Here are guys that
they're already in trouble with him being one.
Here are some names of guys of better ERAs. Tyler Mahle in Texas, Tyler McGill with the Mets, Nick Pivetta with the Padres, Shane Smith with the White Sox, Chris Bubik.
Who?
with the Royals.
Beg your pardon?
Griffin Canning of the Mets, Chris Bassett of the Blue Jays, Drew Rasmussen, no relation to Paul, of the Rays.
And you're not even naming, like, big names here.
I know, because I'm naming the guys who are just randos. Tyler Anderson with the Angels, the ex-Bucko. Matthew Boyd. I mean, these are just, most of the guys I named are just journeyman pitchers. And I think water will find its level with those guys. And I think Skenes will perform better. But, like, you've got Yamamoto's got an ERA of 1.06. Max Fried, 1.19. Jesus Luzardo with the Phillies, 1.73. Some guys, through their first half dozen starts, are off to incredible starts. He's not.
He's looked much more hittable overall.
412-928-9370. Here's Derek on the fan. Hello, Derek.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're good.
I'm completely aligned with you in terms of too much. I think that he's trying to throw too many pitches instead of focus on the several pitches that really, really worked for him last year. I mentioned that to a couple buddies after that Cardinals game, and I heard that brought up several times just by different people. And what do you think the possibility is that these numbnuts are asking him to pitch to contact versus just blow everybody away?
I don't think they ask him to do
Thanks, Derek.
Derek, I don't think that they ask him to do a lot of stuff. I think to their credit, they largely stay completely away from him and let him do his own thing. He's talked about wanting to be more efficient. That's something he
I agree
has
with you
said
on
of
this.
His own volition that he wants to do to pitch deeper into ball games.
I get it. I think we did see it with Garrett Cole here, and then we watched Garrett Cole explode in Houston when they said, stop trying to get ground balls.
Well, they also fixed his spin rate, too.
Yeah,
they fixed his spin rate issues, too. They were and I'm sure Houston may have had some sticky substances that they were using better than anybody else to help people spin the ball like Garrett Cole was, but I think this is a Paul Skeens thing. I don't think it's a Pirates thing. He has a fastball. He has a four-seam fastball, a slider, and a splinker, which should be his bread-and-butter pitches. That should be how he makes his money, so to speak.
RJ's next. Hello, RJ. RJ? Goodbye. Dan is next. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, man.
So I was at the game today, and I think a lot of what I saw echoes what you guys are seeing. You know, I think he's trying to do too much in the first few innings, and, like, you know, he's trying to get the backdoor, you know, pitch to hit the edge, or, you know, he's trying to paint the corners, and he's getting that pitch count up. And so, like, when you get halfway through, he's just trying to, you know, power the zone with strikes, and that's where in the fifth, you know, he became a lot more hittable. Whenever he's throwing more in the zone, because, you know, he's trying to get through the games and trying to be more efficient. And, like, you know, I think that sometimes that he runs into trouble like that. What are your guys' thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I thought
– Thank you.
I didn't think the early innings were, like, an example of him being pinpoint. At one point, he had thrown 54 pitches and only 25 of them were strikes. Like, he was wild. There's a difference between nibbling early and then eventually coming to the hitters later in the game – and just not having your release point or your control or your location. He didn't have his location today. That was the issue. It wasn't like a by-design thing where he was just trying to hit the same spot on each corner, you know, either corner every other pitch. I don't give him that grace at all. He didn't have it
today. And I think, like, there's valor in the fact that he only gave up three runs and still got them through five, which is not great, but he didn't blow up on the mound and need to get pulled early. So there's that. You know what I mean?
But, like, you don't really rate him on how many times do you battle through for five innings without your best
stuff.
Well,
no, but I would just – I'd come back to this. I just feel like trying to give, like, Paul Skeens that silver lining credit has happened already too many times this year. You know, where
or
it's
trying,
like,
to explain why he didn't look like Paul
yeah,
Skeens.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, the game against St. Louis at home, his first start, he still gave him six. You know, he still got them through six innings. He gave up runs, but he still ate some innings for him. Like, I don't want to be having those conversations about him. Like, I want to have more conversations like the one in L.A. on Friday where he took on, what's his face? Why am I forgetting
Yamamoto.
Yes, he pitched against Yamamoto, but went through their lineup of
Otani,
Mookie Betts and Otani and
Max
Freeman and those dudes.
Max
and
Muncy,
made
the
them
greatest
look
Amish
like
player ever.
Little leaguers.
Here's somebody who's on the other end of the extremes, though. Tim on Twitter. Skeens has now had two very poor starts, has not looked anything like he did last year. The book is in on him, and he may just not be the super-duper star.
I thought the expression was the book is out.
No, the book is now in. Its publisher has got it. They've put the binding on it. There's a dedication and a foreword. The book is in on him, and he just may not be the super-duper star we'd all hope for. He looks pretty mediocre right now. Not even a top 20 starter in MLB. Newsflash, if you're the 22nd best starter in the league, you are much better than a mediocre pitcher.
Donnie Kelly managed today because Derek Shelton was down in Boca Raton for his son's college graduation. Early graduation, I would say. May 1st, in the middle of the week, too, by the way.
The middle of the week part is a little strange, but, I mean, Penn State, I graduated my senior year. It was very early
okay.
in
May. Let's get his take. Let's see if he sounds managerial here, talking about the Pirates' loss.
What did you see out of Paul in that fifth inning?
Good thing. You know, it just looked like he was tiring a little bit. Pitches were elevated. Velo came down a tick and just kind of got out of whack a little bit there.
How about in the third with the command, three walks in a row?
Yeah, it just didn't seem as sharp today. Yeah, and he he's a competitor, man. He went out there, he gives you everything he's got every single day, and you know, he wanted to keep going and go get after it. You know, just it, I don't think his stuff was as sharp there in the third, and then in the fifth it trended down too.
You inherited a pretty tough situation after what happened last night. Did you notice that kind of weighing on the guys at all a little bit this morning?
You know what? I think it was weighing on everybody. You know, I think they handled it really, really well. They were ready to go out there and compete. And, I mean, for I'm assuming everybody that's in here was here last night. And just, you know, our hearts go out to that guy and his family. And I think that you'd be lying if you said it wasn't weighing on you. But they're professionals. They were ready to go out and compete and play. And, you know, give it all they had.
When you look at maybe a bright spot or two from today, when you look at the way you guys have moved Brian Reynolds into right field, O'Neill Cruz transitioning into center, nice to see those types of plays from them today that have saved runs.
Yeah, no doubt. Cruzy is every single day working his butt off in the outfield, shagging Brian, going to right. I mean, Adam Frazier made I don't know how many plays today and has all season. You know, just to see them get after it and see the way that they work every single day has been really impressive. And, you know, O'Neill getting better, he made a couple plays this series that were really, really good.
That came from Sportsnet Pittsburgh, as you could tell by the music there coming out of that press conference. The Paul Skeens tired thing I would get because he threw 108 pitches if he was on regular rest, but he got the extra day. So to say that he was basically tired or fatigued in the fifth inning is surprising to me because this guy's built to throw about 130 pitches. So it's interesting to hear.
It's the whole kind of appeal of having a guy who's 6'6", 235.
To hear Donnie say that, it'll be interesting when we hear from Skeens later if he agrees with that. I would be surprised if he does.
Do you think Donnie Kelly sounded managerial? He sounded kind of like Kyle Dubas to me.
That doesn't sound. I don't take that as a compliment.
Well, no, just I'm not talking about the way he spoke, just the tone. The actual like sound of hearing him talk, I was like, it kind of reminds me of a Dubas
person. I think he said an okay tone there because they lost. I liked that. That he was not over the top. I don't want exuberance.
He was after subdued. A game.
Yeah, I want a subdued manager there.
Well, yeah, you don't want the manager going, you know what, we'll get him tomorrow.
I think
rah rah.
I think it would have sounded like he was trying too hard if he was like super angry. So I'm fine with the tone. The thing about Cruz that is just baffling to me is the guy has played like one of the best hitters in all of baseball through the first 30 plus games, and this team still stinks.
It's a What it should be is like a massive warning sign as to how poorly constructed the rest of the team is. If you and I had been told that on May 1st, Cruz would finish their game, you don't get to find out their record, and his OPS would be over 900, and he would look for all the world like a guy who had really started to figure it out, I would say at bare minimum, I would tell you that they're probably like a 500 team. They're eight games.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thunder.
Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Detour from another Pirates loss. This one was on Paul Skeens, who had one of his worst starts. I think it was from the way he looked, his worst start. Three home runs allowed, more walks than hits. Walked three guys in a row. That had never happened in his big league career. The Pirates now... other than the Rockies and the White Sox, they've got the worst record in baseball. Steelers. Draft in the books. Will Howard. Sixth-round pick. We had Austin Bechtold and Joe Starkey arguing vehemently before our show today about this. Austin said, if Will Howard has Landry Jones' career in Pittsburgh, it'll be a good pick.
How many games did Landry Jones win?
Donnie, how many games did Landry Jones win?
Oh, I don't know, like three or four.
Three.
A couple
three.
Against the Browns, and then that – well, no, that Arizona game wouldn't count. He didn't start.
I think the answer is three. If I set the over-under on 2.5 games Will Howard wins as a Steelers quarterback in his career, would you go over or under that?
I think I'd go under.
Donnie?
I'd go over.
I'm going to go over, too. Let's get Steve Palazzolo from the 33rd team his thoughts. Would you go over or under that number, Steve?
How many did you say again?
2.5 Will Howard, career wins as a Steeler.
I'll go over. Go Will.
What do you like about
winner? No, I don't love Will Howard, but it's in the sixth round. I thought a lot of the QBs just had something developmental about them to build around, and I think, you know, Howard's got an okay arm. He's kind of athletic, and I liked the way he led Ohio State. I know they were loaded, but I liked the way he bounced back from the terrible Michigan game. I liked how he hits the 3rd-and-11 bomb to Jeremiah Smith to seal the deal against Notre Dame. I thought he did really well in some clutch moments for them. I know there's a bad one against Oregon, and again, the whole Michigan game was awful, but I thought he bounced back from adversity pretty well. He's got some tools. He's okay. He just throws some hospital balls over the middle of the field. But yeah, I thought he was aggressive throwing the ball down the field and gave them opportunities to win.
Steve, when you look at the build there, 6'4", almost 240, basically like the identical height weight to Josh Allen. I know he doesn't have Allen's arm, but like good athlete by and large. It just makes me feel like there has to be something with him that's like an Achilles heel that causes a guy that big and that athletic to actually fall to the sixth round. So is there some sort of fatal flaw that hasn't been brought up about him yet that kept him on the board that long?
I don't know if there's anything specific fatally as far as the flaw. It's just inconsistency. Like the same description we used on Milroe, there are some games where, you know, his accuracy is all over the place or whatever. I mean, Howard has elements of that. I mean, he will overthrow receivers over the middle field a couple times a game, it seems. And his arm's not great. It's good. I think he's been touted as having a big arm, but it's not great. It's fine. And the athleticism is kind of, I don't know, like a lower-end Daniel Jones-ish. I'm comparing to Daniel Jones because he also was wide open for a touchdown run and tripped and fell in the title game, much like Daniel Jones fell on a 75-yard run a few years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I think his velocity, I think his like arm strength is okay, and I think that's a big part of it as well, and just the inconsistency. And if you want to dock him, you would say his accuracy was all over the place at Kansas State, and maybe it got better this year, but that's throwing to Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Abuka, Chip Kelly calling the plays. So if you wanted to dock him, you would say, yeah, he was more of a passenger than the driver for that Ohio State offense.
Oh, be careful with that, because Ben Roethlisberger's already come after Mulsey for having that exact opinion, Steve. So you might get Hall of Fame quarterback's bad graces.
Is Ben a QB defender the same way Dan Orlovsky is? It's never the QB's fault?
Ben is not. He will absolutely go after Steelers QBs, especially if he thinks that they're a threat to his legacy.
Which is why he
at the very outset said he was rooting against Kenny Pickett and then quickly became Kenny's biggest fan when he realized he wasn't a threat. Ben did say like he didn't like the arguments against Howard that he played with NFL competition and he was, like you said, a passenger. To which I say, and I wish I would have said this yesterday when we played the clip of Ben like moaning and groaning about that, it's absolutely a valid criticism when you're talking about who he had surrounding him relative to the teams he had going against him. Like, Ben's argument was, well, he'll be playing with all NFL players on his team. Yes, against all NFL players on the other side.
Well, by that,
not against a directional Michigan.
By that logic, Matt Leinart and Ken Dorsey would have been good NFL quarterbacks.
We have that same circular argument every year for every prospect, I think. So it always pops up.
Steve, how would you have felt if the Steelers, instead of taking Caleb Johnson in the second round and Jack Sawyer in the fourth round, picked Shedeur Sanders with one of those selections?
I mean, I would have been fine with it. None of us knew exactly what was going on. And look, I think he just pissed off the few teams that needed a starting quarterback within the next 2 years, Steelers included. He probably made himself undraftable for the teams that were desperate at quarterback to make him the guy. And so we didn't really know any of that. So on paper, on the surface, I would have said, yeah, absolutely, Shedeur Sanders in the second or the fourth. I would have taken that shot. But if you're out on him and you've got more information than we had about how he handled interviews and, blew off interviews or whatever it may have been, then I understand not doing it. But yeah, I'm all for taking shots at quarterback, as you guys know, and I think he's got starter potential.
Who was your favorite pick by the Steelers in this draft? Do you need me to refresh your memory on who they picked, Steve?
I got them in front of me here. Let's see. Probably, I mean, for where they were picked, I would say probably Jack Sawyer. Yeah.
Really? Why?
I like Harmon, and I loved Caleb Johnson on film, so he's close for me. But I just think Sawyer's a really good, productive player, and then you just think about the – I know he's not athletic or anything like that, but you think about the Nick Herbigs and Alex Highsmiths that they've gotten in the third and fourth round over the last few years, and I just think they're continuing to replenish that position. The guy's good against the run. I think he could be an okay pass rusher, and in the fourth round, I think there's good value there. Caleb Johnson's close for me, though.
What did you like so much about Caleb Johnson? But despite the fact that Pony and I, and maybe this disqualifies us, we are just lowly hot take artists. We both just made the, he doesn't have a great 40 time. He kind of reminds us of Najee Harris in build and lack of explosive
speed. Well, Nick Saban said that, and so did Charles Davis and Brian Baldinger, so it's not like we're in horrible company.
Yes,
with that.
But I wanted to just put us in there, Pony. I wanted to lead the witness here a little towards this.
Yeah, I did not watch him and think, man, his 40 time. My guy is Cam Scataboo's one of my favorite players in the draft, and I watched him and I thought he's going to have a bad 40. It does limit some of his potential. He looks slow. I never really watched Caleb Johnson and was like, man, poor guy's going to have to run at Indy and show everybody how slow he is. Like, he plays fast, so I don't care about his 40 time. That dude, he's tough to tackle. He reminded me of the way he runs the zone game. Reminded me of Joe Mixon, where he's just really smooth. Good feel for when to cut it upfield, and then he's just tough to tackle, man. I mean, some of the runs he had against Ohio State, you know, that loaded national title champion, I mean, it was unbelievable. So I was really impressed by Caleb Johnson. I really thought he was going to go in the second, so I thought that was a good pick in the third for sure.
Steve, we'll get you out on this. Ross Tucker said on Good Morning Football that the best high school football player he ever watched was Terrell Pryor. Who is the best high school football player Steve Palazzolo ever watched?
Oh, man. I don't know if I've had any. I mean, in person, I haven't had a whole bunch of good ones. I think it's Vita Vea's running back tape or something like that was the most fun. Wasn't Vita Vea playing running back in college? I think that's who it was.
Didn't he play running back at about 320 pounds?
Really?
Yeah.
It was him or someone.
Watch that.
Some monster nose tackle like him. I want to say it was Vita Vea.
I think you're right, because he has nimble feet, and there's just a bunch of 17-year-olds who just want to go out on a date with their girlfriend after the game making business decisions.
Yes. I got to look that up. So I'll go with that as my answer. I came from bad Massachusetts high school football. I didn't see much good high school ball.
Pony, I am looking at this right now. Vita Vea was a big-time running back in high school, and he just is an absolute unit dominating these poor sets.
All right, so Steve did a pretty good job there, quick on his feet to come up with a name. Thank you, Steve. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Steve Palazzolo, the 33rd team. Check out his podcast. Check the mic. 4:30 means it's time for the Donnie Football Debrief. It's brought to you by Saloni's, Italian bread company, over 100 years of baking experience. Don, what do you got for us on the first day of May?
The Debrief, May 1, 2025. This came out yesterday, I think, right after we were finished on the show. Another layer to the Bill Belichick CBS Sunday morning interview.
Yeah.
That was sent around by a CBS spokesperson. The statement here, quote, "When we agreed to speak with Mr. Belichick, it was for a wide-ranging interview. There were no preconditions or limitations to this conversation. This was confirmed repeatedly with his publisher before the interview took place and after it was completed."
It seems more and more in light of that. Not that they didn't always seem like the more credible party here. It just seems like his girlfriend is just trying to completely take control of this and is throwing sort of a temper tantrum about it.
So
she seems just so much like the dominant central figure in every single aspect of this.
So she is very online. She is someone that will see comments about their relationship and she will clap back and go after people. And I heard somebody bring this up, and I don't remember where, or I would give them credit for it. And I thought it was a very, I wondered about this after I heard this question broached. Do you think she brings it back to him? She's 24 years old, right?
Yep.
24?
Yep.
So is she on her phone, like, looking at all these mean things people are saying about her and Bill? And while this is happening, is she, like, bitching up a storm? Oh, thank you. I appreciate you. Is she saying things during, like, they're at home and they're done with dinner?
Can you believe what, like...
Yeah.
Can you believe what Heels fan 2732 said about me?
Because, like, I think her reaction says she's, like, constantly finding these things, seeing these things, and getting upset about these things. And is a Bill Belichick in his 70s who used to say, like, Instaface and...
It was Snapface and Instabook or whatever. Face chat.
Like, what is he doing when she's saying these things? Because it apparently, like, if they are, I'm guessing they are having these conversations. Because I've lived that. Like, if you're with your wife and she sees something that she doesn't like on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, she says it to you or says something.
I think he's probably, like, scrolling. He's probably, like, watching some sort of ship show, like a thing about, like, naval battles. Oh, that's interesting,
but
honey.
The Bill Belichick I know would say something like, don't, who cares, don't respond, don't look at it, like, stay offline, delete your account,
etc. The Bill Belichick you know didn't have a 24-year-old girlfriend that he was trying to impress all the time.
Right, so he either doesn't...
So he's not that Bill Belichick
He either
anymore.
Doesn't care anymore.
He doesn't.
Or, like, he's saying, don't do these things, and she's doing them anyways.
Which
and
means he doesn't care enough to break up with her.
Right, and it's not enough for it to be, like, a relationship ender.
I'm going to tell you right now, like, this is probably too serious of a comment for sort of the way people are kind of laughing at this still, is like, man, this is ridiculous.
Aditi made it sound like it has felt like Bill Belichick was in harm's way yesterday.
I think it has a very bad ending. I actually do. I think it had, like...
The relationship or, like, his whole...
The whole thing.
The Bill Belichick career.
I think the relationship and his like, late career arc here are inextricably linked. And I think they both have a very ugly ending.
Well, there was also the thing that came out yesterday in the New York Post that starting, I think, in December of 2023 when he was still the Patriots coach... She started buying, like, real estate all over the place for millions of dollars. It sounds like she's actually done a really good job with that. Like, her business savvy, her business acumen is pretty good.
Whenever their relationship ends, she will not have gotten nothing out of it. She will be, like, a real estate mogul because of, like, some of the obvious connections.
And she used Belichick's largesse and wealth to, like, buy these things.
And she's turning up – obviously, yes, she's making money off of it. I'm just saying, like, it seems like in her – purview, and I don't want to be the guy who says, oh, she's just using him, but she is leveraging the Bill Belichick brand to, I guess you would say, their collective benefit. If she's making all this money off it, he would be benefiting from it too.
I think I also read that the guy she dated before Belichick was 63.
Yeah, he was also older, much older than her.
So she's been hunting down these old guys, and then in this New York Post article, and it's the New York Post, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. Like that.
Oh, you love you.
It doesn't
New York Post.
It doesn't make me feel like this is 100% accurate.
You're saying that they're not the old gray lady in New York City.
But just randomly in the, did you read the real estate article?
I skimmed.
Did you read it, Donnie? Did you see it? The one I'm talking about. There's just a random paragraph about her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
I think her parents are separated. She's from Maine. Her mom and dad ran like a fishing business there. That fell apart a few years ago. I don't exactly know why. Her mom has moved to Rhode Island. And her mom, I don't know how this is relevant. Her mom owns a sex toy shop. they just shoehorned that information in there. I mean, it's like, it's provocative, so I get why they did it.
I was going to say, how was that not the New York Post's like leads
but,
like headline
but
there?
But I would just like... So everybody thinks that this relationship is weird. I think it is. Chris Russo went on this rant yesterday and said, like, what if she wants kids? What's going to happen? Bill's going to be 90 when the kid's like graduating high school.
You and I already had this discussion about De Niro fathering a child at like 80 and how messed up I think that is.
But like my thought is if her mom, like if that, like she runs a sex toy shop, my guess is if that's true, like she probably has a very like liberal open mind to relationships if you're in that industry or that business. I've often thought to myself as a father of a daughter how I would feel if she brought home someone who was 50 years older than her, and maybe like that doesn't apply because of her parents' life experiences and life journey. I don't know, but it is very, very weird. And somebody also tweeted out, and I thought this was accurate, I can't wait to watch a Netflix documentary series about this relationship like 2 or 3 years from now. And I agree with that.
I have a question about the mom who runs the sex toy shop.
Please, by all means.
You buried the other lead here. It says, and museum. Is it a museum about sex toys? This, and see here, the first dildo.
That's a great question.
What
dude.
If the museum's completely unconnected to the sex toys? I don't know what's funnier. Oh, no, actually, the museum is about, like, fine china from, like, the Ming Dynasty. But we have some very nice racy videos over here if you're in the market.
Donnie, you obviously brought this up, this whole Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick thing, because you have opinions on it. So what do you want to say about it?
I'm just amazed that even Bill Belichick, a guy that we heard for years, you guys, I mean, kind of went through this, like a guy we heard for years, didn't care about any sort of social media, certainly didn't give a hoot about what anybody thought of him, and now he is just being you used the term yesterday, whipped. Like we're seeing Bill Belichick, maybe the greatest NFL coach of all time, he's being whipped by a woman that's 50 years younger than him.
Do you think he knows that those pictures out there of him with like his shirt off, like she's like doing this acrobatic act where he's balancing her like with his legs up in the air? Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
I do know that picture, yes.
Do you think he knows that those pictures are out there?
Yeah.
Do you think,
I think he does? I think he's a lot smarter to social media than he lets on.
Well, when he did the whole InstaFace like snapbook and all that, you'll notice he had all the right words just like juxtaposed or transposed. So he knows what they're all called. Like I thought that was a very knowing thing. I'm sorry. Her mom lives in Provincetown. I just clicked on
it's
Google.
A very
Maps.
Eccentric place, by the way. I've been there before.
Museums in Provincetown, and I'm just trying to figure out which one's got the sex toy shop in the back, or maybe it's the sex toy shop in the front with the museum in the back.
Oh man.
What I mean, Donnie, you know who I think has to love this? Isn't Sarah just geared up, ready? Like
oh, that's
Tony
a great
said
point.
For the Netflix special, this is going to be one that bonds the two of you even closer together. Bill Belichick, and also, it seems like, highly eccentric, much younger girlfriend. This is a Lifetime movie, a Netflix special. We have a lot of potential here.
It's a reality TV show waiting to happen.
Amanda's going to love it, too.
Didn't something happen where they were supposed to do a Hard Knocks-type series around
yeah,
North
and
Carolina
she,
football,
she put the
she
kibosh
shut it down?
On that.
See, I would think she'd want the exact opposite.
Maybe, is that him? Is that a compromise where she shuts it down, but he was the one behind the scenes pulling the strings with her? Because you know he would hate that. Although the new version of him seems fine being out on Front
That's
Street.
That's what Donnie just said.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. The whole thing just, again, I don't want to be the guy who like takes this kind of funny story and is so grim about it. I'm not saying it's going to end in like a murder or anything like that. I just think it when it ends, it will be very ugly and very public.
So, Chris, how old's your dad?
74.
Donnie, how old's John Football?
62.
All right, so my dad's right in the middle. I think he's 67.
Seven, okay.
67. Do you think our dads, if they had a friend who was dating a girl who was 24, would your dad's reaction be like, man, more power to you, good for you? Or would he be like, that is disgusting?
I think my dad would find it very strange and off-putting. I don't want to speak too much for my dad, but here's what I feel like. I feel like of the three of our dads, my dad would be like, that's unusual, that's strange, I don't really think that's like normal. I think John Football would be like, go get him, big guy. And I think your dad would be the same, Pony.
Donnie?
I think Malzi is correct.
So your dad's looking at this Bill Belichick situation. He's like, I don't get what the big hullabaloo's about. Good for him.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely saying good for him. He's probably cheering for him.
Playing the old cover one defense.
I don't know. My dad generally, although my dad's wife now is somebody he went to high school with.
Okay.
But he generally, like, dated younger women, so it would kind of be a little
She's
bit of a...
She's about 50 years younger yeah, than him, though, man. Well, I think when you, if you want to, like, put this into perspective
no, you know
how
what?
Strange it is, he was 49 years old when she was born.
I take it back. My father can't be down with this because his daughter's Jordan Hudson's age, and I just know what my sister's like, and it would just... my sister would not talk to him anymore if he did something like this, 100%.
Okay, so he would...
Yeah, so I don't think he would... I think he would... Come on, you have to see...
Bill Belichick was 48 or 49 point. Years old when Jordan Hudson was born. She was a small crying
I also
infant.
Think it's annoying that he it's was, Jordan and not Jordan.
Don't you think that's part of it? Maybe her family like said, we call you Jordan. She goes, I am Jordan. It's going to get people talking. I'm still looking for this museum. I got to figure out which one it is.
We should do a show remote from there.
Content Craig would love that one.